Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Mistress Carrie, weekdays 10 to 3 on WAAF. Podcasts are always online and on your schedule at WAAF.com.
My 20th anniversary show, and I believe that is what we call a Lenny and Squiggy entrance, Mike Hsu.
Oh, hello.
What's up?
What's going on?
20 years.
20 years today.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts.
It is.
And it
just doesn't seem that long.
People have been asking, like, well, what's the most memorable this and what's the most memorable that? And first of all, I feel like half the stuff that's the most memorable I don't remember. For good reason.
Yeah, me too. I don't know why.
And then the stuff I do remember, there's so much amazing stuff that I've been going through all of my archives, just trying to sift through it all. And one of the craziest weekends, other than the phone booth trip that,
that
Mark Raz brought up earlier when he called.
Yeah, that was, that wasn't a weekend. That was a full week.
Yeah, that was a full week. But one of the other, the crazy weekend was, remember when the Damage Plan album came out? And the band came up to Boston for the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we had like an album release party. And then they came up and spent the night with you at Harder Faster.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came up the next day on my show. Like, we couldn't get rid of them.
Oh, yeah. They wanted to do it.
They
came up here. I did a special Harder Faster on a Saturday night because it was usually on Sundays.
Yeah.
And
But when they're available, that's when you do it.
Right, so we moved everything to Saturday, and they came up, and I don't know if I should be saying this on the air. They had a couple of bottles of Crown Royal.
No!
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, and there
Well, we know they weren't drinking and driving because they pulled up in the tour bus.
Yeah, the tour bus was right out front.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I believe after we did Harder Faster, we all adjourned to the model down here, down the street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, and hung out there for a little while.
Yeah, and then the next morning, they came in with me, and I found some of the audio because Vinnie Paul and Dime hosted a party for the Stanley Cup champion.
Dallas Stars.
The Dallas Stars.
Yeah, huge hockey fans.
And there were, this is what happened. Do you guys fight at all ever? Did they fight? Man, what's it like being on tour with brothers?
People ask us this stuff all the time, man. You know,
see Vinny's black eye over there?
I think Vinny's got the best answer for it, and it's the truth.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we grew up with a love for music, wanting to play music together. A lot of kids grow up, mom and dad are like, how come you can't be like Susie? She gets straight A's, or your brother does so good, why can't you? And they're in competition with each other. And we never had a competition. It was always a drive to play music, and he's like my best friend, you know? I don't even really think about the fact he's my brother, you know? It's just like he's a friend, man.
What about your pool?
The Crown Roll pool?
Now, one of the most famous things that you ever said on the air that got the most reaction from everybody was that you had the gall, the audacity to dent the Stanley Cup
on the side
of your swimming pool.
The Crown Royal
pool. I didn't do it. Guy Carboneau did it. Number 41 lives on in infamy.
And you said how many strippers were sitting on the four?
There was plenty of them. Listen, let me tell you what happened.
They were riding the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, they got on it naked, and we drank probably two cases of Crown out of it, and it got table dances. Everybody got table dances. Whole team got and it was great. I don't care if they're married. They all had a good time, you know? I mean, hell.
That cup, man, everybody thinks that cup is like, it is sacred in its own right, but, you know, if anybody only knew what really goes down with that rig,
man,
because when I walked in the club, we went down to the Big Apple, is a joint back at the house, and I walked in, and they're all standing there going, come on, everybody's just dumping beer and shots, everything into this thing, and just lipping it, blowing it up, and that thing takes some punishment, man. Just think of the years of what's been done to it.
And I'll tell you exactly.
If we win the Stanley Cup, will you have the party for the Bruins?
No, I'm a Dallas Stars fan. I will be.
Okay. Just turn his mic off.
Man.
No, go ahead. I'm only
got ripped off on that one.
Anyways, what really happened, man, is it got all these dances and everything drank out of it, and the sun was coming up. It was about 5:30 in the morning. we're all down in the pool in the hot tub, and Guy Carboneau comes out on the balcony, and he goes, "Hey, Luds, catch!" And he threw it, and it went boink on the side of the pool, oh, and then into the water, and then me, Darian Hatcher, and Luds jumping on it and sank it to the bottom, and the cup keeper's over there pulling his hair out. And then the NHL tried to cover the whole thing up, say, "Eddie Belfour dropped it off the airplane." I was like, give me a break. That's not what happened. They didn't want everybody to know what really went on. They tried to cover it up.
Oh, you're a god, dude.
I love the fact that Dimebag Darrell calls the Stanley Cup "that rig." Did you catch that?
Yeah, that rig.
Yeah.
That rig. Oh, those guys. That's like a normal weekend for those guys.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
And then when you got, because at the time, Zach Wilde was in the heyday of his crazy partying years. So when you got Zach and Dime together,
oh yeah,
they were just this twisted set of twins that was just out of control. This is what Dimebag was talking about when he was talking about Zach.
I heard you talking to Mike Shue on Saturday night about some of the different cameo appearances that are on the CD. And you were talking a little bit about, like, Zach. And did you know that he got voted, like, the most influential guitar player of the year? For
most valuable player.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, he's my favorite. You know.
Do you guys ever, like, want to do the celebrity death match between the two of you to see who could out-shred each other? Have you tried to do that? Who's got faster fingers?
Zach's got faster fingers than mine. You know, that's just Z, man. He is off the hook. He's my favorite guitar player. So, we don't got to go there, but... We definitely got to jam together, man. We wanted to put something together somewhere in the future where we just
He was talking about doing a tour of just heavy metal guitar players, kind of like the G3. And when I asked him who he would want on the bill, he said Dimebag Darrell first.
Oh, no.
Because he came in the studio and was hanging out with us.
We're definitely we're strapped in already. We're trying to pull Edward out of retirement right now. You know, get that thing up.
Do you guys have a game plan for this? Because I would love.
We have a
damage
plan.
Exactly. You guys are very intimidating people. And if you were to just, like, show up on Eddie Van Halen's front lawn.
And Zach did. Zach pulled up and he hit the bell and Ed goes, "Oh, what's going on?" He goes, "Zach, bro, I'm out of beer. Me and Dom want to jam with you. We're coming in right now, bro." And Ed said, "Nah, man, I can't do it right now." But he's coming out, dude. We're getting him.
Are you sure?
I don't know.
You're getting my hopes up, Dime.
Well, hey, man, if Ed don't come out, we can still do something heavy. You know, all of us are going to be involved, but... You know, let's bring Kerry King into the picture. Let's bring George Lynch.
Can you imagine if those guys actually, like, showing up at Eddie Van Halen's house? Like, come let us in?
Yeah, I'd be afraid, too.
That's basically what they did to the studio when they showed up.
Yeah, you know, those guys showed up. It wouldn't be so much how they looked. It's about just the knowledge of how they drink.
Yeah.
You know, and their cast iron livers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's by that then. Zach doesn't drink anymore, but back then he was, you know, he showed up here a couple times.
One time
dressed as a woman.
That's right.
Yep, and the finest Donna Karen he could find on the way up here.
Everybody was asking when I was asking, you know, "Hey, what are your memories or whatever?" Everybody was like, "You got to tell Dimebag Darrell stories because there were just so many of them." Remember when you and I, they invited us up on stage at Loco Bazooka and that we sang Walk with them?
That was amazing.
I was like, "Oh my God, please tell me somebody got pictures of this." And they did.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yep. And then partying with them up in Lowell.
Oh my God.
After one of the indoor beach parties.
Somebody stiffed. I don't know who had volunteered to pay the bar tab. That was the night I think the Dimebag drew the black eye on me. Was that the night?
Right, because somebody took a Sharpie and drew Gene Simmons makeup on him.
Yeah.
In Sharpie.
So he wanted me, so he drew like a black eye on me.
All right.
And then somebody had volunteered to pay the bar tab, and then they skipped out on it, and Dimebag Darrell found out about it, and then he paid the tab for everybody.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then obviously... You know, losing him and the way that we did, it was devastating for every rock fan. It was devastating for anybody that knew him.
And, yeah, because he was a sweet, sweet guy.
Yeah.
Just the way I watched him interact with fans at that Loco Bazooka they played at. You know, he was in back of the stage. It was open air and he's tuning up. He's getting his gear together and stuff like that. But he talked to everyone, every band that was back there, people that made it back there somehow wanted to go up and shake his hand and say hi and say a few things. And he talked to everybody.
You know who he met backstage at that show? I was telling Ian, I recorded a podcast with Ian Barrett from Real Rock TV, and we were talking about this story. My mom was backstage at Loco Bazooka, and Dime found out and wanted to meet her. So I said the words out loud. Dimebag Darrell, this is my mom. Mom, this is Dimebag Darrell. And she said, hi, it's so nice to meet you. What should I call you? Daryl, Mr. Bag?
Mr. Bag.
Which I almost died laughing. And then he was like, Mistress Carrie's mama, you can call me whatever you like. And he gave her this big hug and like this big dime bag hairy kiss on the cheek. Yeah. And it was adorable.
Yeah. He was a very sweet guy. He was nice to everybody.
And then shortly after he passed away, Zach Wilde came to town and I found some of that audio too.
I'll never get over this. I mean, at the bottom line is this has really messed everybody's life up forever. You know, that's in contact with these families. You know, and it's all about dime. I was a pallbearer at the funeral, me and Eddie Van Halen and everything. I you know, and trust me, laying your brother when I had to lay my mother to rest and laying dime to rest, I'll never get over either one of them, ever. You don't just, like, forget about it and go out and go out for a cup of coffee after it. You know what I mean? It's just as far as I'm concerned, I mean, with dime and everything like that, you know, he's just up in God's Tavern with Randy Rhoads and Jimi Hendrix and all the guys. And they, you know, because that's where we're all going to end up anyways. All the drinks are free. Dime's making sure he's pouring cocktails for everybody. And it's got the best jukebox up there. And then Dime's just keeping the beer cold till I get up there. Because Dime was the best, man. But it's just like, just goofy all the time and just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful soul. Proof that God exists. So here we go. Here's the dime, man. Cheers.
Yeah!
Crack a cold one open here. Timmy, hold that thing, man. Didn't write the song about dime before, but, you know, we were talking on the road when he was going through the whole Pantera thing and everything like that, and that breaking up and everything like that. He was just like, I go, boss, let me explain something to you. You're the best guitar player in the world. You have to do what you got to do. Eventually, when I ended up writing this song, I didn't even write it about dime, but then I looked at it, I go, it's forever his song. This is his song. Yeah, that sucks, you know?
So he wrote In This River, and I had to choose between two versions to play today, and I have the acoustic version that he played in the studio that day, but we also have a version from 2007 where he played live in a lunchroom, like a listener actually won Zach Wilde to come in their workplace and play, and he wanted to play the song on piano. And the piano version is just so, I know that even though Zach is such an amazing guitar player, but he's a great pianist as well. And that's how he wrote the song. So I wanted to play the piano version of In This River for Dime.
Here we go. This is Dime's tune, In This River. It was somewhat different.
Every time we've had a chance to talk with you, and especially now kind of getting a chance to sit down with you, you seem like you're in the best place that you've ever been in your life. Is that a fair assessment that now is like the happiest time for you?
There's no comparison, really. I mean, I've been very fortunate, had a fortunate life, but also a really chaotic life and gone through some pretty dark periods. Some of it kind of self-imposed, some of it, you know, just losing close friends and people that I miss. Now is something, and I never really even knew that this was a way that life can be like. Being happily married, having a family be part of my career where it's not a juggling act, where it's just this is what we all kind of do together, and that actually makes it work better. Writing songs for my record was unlike any experience I'd ever had. Rather than going to a studio and being in kind of a dark room, which is what I was used to, and just kind of writing alone, I just was in the spare bedroom at home, and with my kids outside, you know, I could hear them running around, and I focused on what I was doing, and then had my family there, and never had that sort of isolating feeling that I used to get, and that part of that is what brought on depression for me sometimes, and you know, that's just not a component of my life anymore, which is fantastic.
Ironically, that was recorded on April 18th of 2007, right here in the WAF studios. That's Chris Cornell, acoustic, Fell on Black Days. It is my 20th anniversary show. My name is Mistress Carrie. Thank you very much for tuning in. Woo! And now I all of a sudden have a room full of people.
A motorcade.
And my boss, the program director here at WAF, Ron Valeri, just came in. I have been saving this piece of audio because you told me I could do whatever I wanted, but that I had to do the work and make sure that it was good. So I've been digging through my archives, and I found what we call the air check. I found the recording of my first time on the air at WAAF.
Oh, good. So you're going to humiliate yourself.
Yes.
Not me.
Yeah,
all right,
no, no.
I was going to change the script
No. But I figured if you were in here, I would ask you why it is that I still have a job. This is not a joke. We had to dub it off of a cassette. I will only play a little bit of it because it is horrendous. But this is the first time I was ever on the radio at WAAF.
107.3 WAAF, that was Green Day and Prosthetic Head. How you doing? My name is Carrie, and we're listening to the only band that has their hair colored more times than me.
What?
Carrie, you pitch up the music, not your voice.
What? I sound like a chipmunk. Listen.
There's a woman in charge, folks, so stay tuned. Up next, we got Bush, and the most eligible bachelor in the world, and Gwen Stefani got him. So, Gavin, we all love you.
Yeah, and I'm still stalking him to this day. Does he still have the restraining order against me?
No, he's perfectly fine with it.
So I'll play more of that later. I can only take it in small bites and bite-sized pieces. There's a giant crowd. If I could tell you how many people are squeezing. This is like the Anthrax antisocial acoustic performance that I played earlier. There's a ton of people in here.
Well, what happened was the mayor had too busy of a schedule today. And somehow I believe him. He's come here.
Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston.
Enough time. So he sent his entire administration in his place.
Oh, my God.
So, Carrie, you've been on the air for a little while now.
Yeah.
Dating back to, I think, under the king's rule. So we'll start with hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. And now we'll take it from old England back to New England. In all seriousness, Mayor Walsh put together a proclamation that he asked us to read, and I'm going to do the honors, or at least part of it, and try to make through without choking up here. And it goes as follows. Whereas Mistress Carrie has been a strong female voice on WAAF, the city's longest-running rock radio station, and whereas having started as a WAAF intern and now the WAAF music director, Mistress Carrie has spent the last 20 years rocking listeners through their workday. And that's not all. In fact, this is a very short list of your accomplishments. Whereas Mistress Carrie has been a dedicated supporter of active duty military personnel and veterans organizations and was the first non-news journalist embedded with the U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. And whereas she is a two-time recipient of the Army Commander's Award for Public Service and a recipient of the Order of St. Maurice, now, therefore, I, Ron Valeri, as requested by Martin J. Walsh, Mayor of the City of Boston, do hereby proclaim April 17th, 2018, to be Mistress Carrie Day in the City of Boston.
Oh, my God!
And the Honorable Mayor Martin J. Walsh goes on to urge all of his fellow Bostonians to join him in celebrating Mistress Carrie's 20 years on WAAF and her significant contributions to Boston radio.
Oh, my God.
Congratulations, Carrie.
Thank you.
There you go.
It's real. I mean, it came with the seal and a signature and everything.
And I'm sure you'll hear from him soon.
Oh, my God. This is
so
awesome. Are you Facebook living this thing right now so you can see the proclamation? This is so cool. Well, I am honored. So thank you to the mayor and obviously everybody that had anything to do with the proclamation and, you know, trying not to get all sappy and, you know, whatever. Ron, it was you when I was an intern, when I applied to be on the street team in 1994. A lot of people don't know that the street team, the guys that go out, drive the vehicles, all that stuff, they had never hired a girl before. And I was the first girl on the WAF street team that was ever hired.
See that? No hashtag me too for this guy.
No. And then to, you know, have started as an intern in 91 to, I thought, oh, I'm on the street team. I'm on the payroll. I'm on Easy Street now. Had no idea how hard it would actually be. And now to be here 20 years later after I started on the air, this place is more of a family than I think people realize, and I'm honored to be a member of it. And I can't thank everybody in this room enough for being so supportive through all the ups and downs. Thank you for approving all my crazy ideas when I come to you and I'm like, hey, I want to go to Afghanistan. Can you sign this piece of paper that says that I can go? And you sign it every time. So Thank you guys so much, Ron. I appreciate all of your support and dedication.
Speaking for everybody, we're lucky to have you, Carrie. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys. Oh, my God. This is unbelievable. It's Mistress Carrie Day in Boston. How am I going to celebrate that? I'm sitting here pondering whether or not a person can get a speeding ticket in the city limits of Boston when it is officially Mistress Carrie Day. And the Framingham Ford studio line rings, and it's Gary Sharon and Paul Geary from Extreme on the other end. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Oh, my God. Hello, Carrie.
How are you?
Well, we just wanted to call and wish you a happy anniversary. Time flies. 20 years?
It's been 20 years on the air, but I will tell you this. This is why I wanted you guys to be a part of the show today. So I started my internship on July 1st, 1991, when I was in college. And the reason why I remember the date is because I have a T-shirt commemorating it, because it was the WAF DJs versus Extreme in Celebrity Softball. So you guys were a part of my first day as an intern here at WAF years ago. Not that many years
ago.
It's
amazing you lasted the day.
I know, right? Do you remember that day that our engineer went to go put a tent up over our broadcast equipment and he busted the water main and flooded the field? Do you remember that? He still works here.
Oh, my God. It was so nuts. Well, I'm still trying to get over the beating we took.
Who knew that Hillman was so good at softball? So
you guys were the ball breakers, right? Or was that us?
I don't remember.
Yeah. No, I remember Paul having a tough time with a pop fly in the infield. I remember that.
Yeah. I caught the ball with my glasses.
Well, I don't know if you guys heard, but Mayor Martin J. Walsh, the Honorable Mayor of Boston, has declared today Mistress Carrie Day in the city of Boston. So I don't know if you guys are both in Boston right now, but I guess I have some kind of power today. So I guess you guys can do whatever you want today because it's my day.
It's your day. I got a few traffic violations maybe you could handle.
Yeah, I'll see if I can work that out. Obviously, the mayor and I are now pretty tight. Tighter than I knew we were.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
So I really appreciate you guys calling to be part of my big day today.
Yeah. Well, we're also hoping you'll be out to see Gary play with Joe Perry tomorrow night at the House of Blues.
Yeah, it's. I love it when a guy like Joe Perry says, Joe Perry and Friends, because then he just starts listing friends like Brad Whitford and Gary Sharon and Barry Goodreau and Charlie Farron. And it must be nice to have friends like that.
Well, he's Joe Effin Perry.
That's right. That's exactly. Right. So you,
hey, Paul, what's the F stand for?
Listen, I want to keep this job for 20 years and one day, if you don't mind, Gary. I would like to have this job tomorrow. Even though it is my day, I would like to keep this job tomorrow.
Yeah, well, we were the beginning and the end.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I was trying to figure out what song to play for you guys, and I was like, well, obviously, if it's Extreme, I want to play More Than Words, but that doesn't involve you, Paul, so I picked this one out instead because this was the reason you got out from behind the drum kit and came out into the front of the stage every night when you performed it. I wanted you to be involved.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Carrie.
So I appreciate you guys calling
me today. And you still didn't answer my question whether you were going to come out tomorrow night.
Yes, I'm coming out tomorrow night. I thought I answered that part. Yeah, of course.
Nice.
I'm bringing my proclamation. I can't even get arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be there for sure. Absolutely.
Nice.
People can get the details on the show, by the way, on the concert page at WAF.com if they want to get details on the show, get tickets, all of that stuff.
Well, it'll be good to see you tomorrow night, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much. It's been a long, strange ride, but it is one hell of a ride, I will tell you. So,
well, we're all still here.
That's right.
Well, we hope you have another 20. Me and Paul won't be around.
Got to thank Paul Geary and Gary Sharon from Extreme for helping to celebrate my 20th anniversary. and see what happens. They make a proclamation. I got to thank the mayor of Boston, Marty Walsh, because he proclaimed today officially Mistress Carrie Day in the city of Boston. And then all of a sudden, the entire Massachusetts National Guard descended on the WAF studio. Hi.
Hey, Carrie, what's going on? Carrie?
How's it going? Allow me to introduce my good friends, Major General Keefe, the commander of the Massachusetts National Guard.
Right, yeah.
And State Sergeant Major Widberg, who I met in Afghanistan years ago. Thank you guys for coming in.
Oh, congratulations.
We wouldn't miss
Thanks.
It.
They gave me a heads up. They were like, there's some big dudes coming down the hall in uniform. Is everything okay down there?
They're looking at my weight, I think. When I said big dudes, you know?
I talked to General Rice earlier. He called from the Pentagon.
Excellent.
So we've been scaring the guys in the other room because the hotline rings. And they say, yeah, I want to talk to Mistress Carrie. And they're like, yeah, where are you calling from? And they go, the Pentagon. They come running in my office. They're like, what the hell is going on?
Oh,
I know a guy.
I know a guy. And now you guys show up too. Thank you for coming in and being part of my big day today.
No, we wouldn't have missed it.
Like, absolutely.
Said you, Sergeant Major, you know, you got to see him overseas. But for 20 years, you've been supporting us. You know, and I know that the mayor's proclamation talks about here, you know, you went over with our troops, Afghanistan, Iraq. I remember the first time I met you was, I think I just got promoted to one-star general, and you were out at Barnes, and you were in the back of an F-15 and got the call sign narco.
I was talking to General Rice about that very thing, because there was a lot of, were you part of the money exchange as to whether or not I would vomit on that flight?
I was not, because quite frankly, full disclosure, every time I've been on a plane, I've puked.
Really?
So, yeah.
They tried really hard.
Yeah. Well, you had Nasty, I think, was flying.
No, Wad flew me.
Oh, Wad did?
I ended up 680 miles an hour in 9 Gs in the F-15 Eagle, and I did not throw up.
Jeez.
Now, do you know where the call sign comes from?
Yeah, because did you pass out?
I did.
That happens. You pull those Gs. Yeah.
So the pilots all get together. For anybody that isn't a decorated fighter pilot like myself, they bring you into the officers' club. And they get like a chalkboard or a dry erase board, and everybody just starts shouting out ideas for your call sign. Now, what I was not aware of is that it's usually not a very good story that your call sign comes from. And so people started shouting out all of these crazy things. And I was like, oh, I don't like that one. And they're like, oh, well, you can drink that off the board, you know. So then I was like, oh, well, I definitely want to do that. I hate that name. And they were like, okay. So they pour you a shot, and then they erase it off the board. And then somebody in the back goes, I want to drink it back on the board. So there's like 50 pilots in there, and they're like, do you want to keep going? I was like, nope, I don't hate it that much to get that drunk with you guys.
That's when I walked in at that point. Yeah.
So they decided on narco because I'm narcoleptic, because I fall asleep when I'm not supposed to. That's where my call sign came from.
As long as you're not flying the plane, that's all right.
Yeah, no. And the other story is that when I went through the training, now this is before the Miracle on the Hudson. And so I had to go out there for like 8 hours of simulator training. Like, it was all very serious for me to go up in that jet. And they were so worried about the bird strikes. And so they made me go over emergency procedures over and over again. So when I went out to Barnes that day to go up in the jet, Wad, the pilot, was like, okay, go over your emergency procedures. And I showed him, I know how to do this and that. And then I'm supposed to do this. And then I'm supposed to eject you and I. And he goes, do everything you just said except eject me. I do not want to be the fighter pilot that gets saved by the DJ. And I said, well, it sucks to be you, because I want to be the DJ that saves the fighter pilot. So I will be going through all of my emergency procedures.
It is, and you're right. There is a lot of stuff you need to know before you just get in that plane.
Yeah,
as a passenger.
All kidding aside, they put me through the ringer training to make sure that I was going to be able to handle all of that. And I took it very seriously. And I have 1 hour of fighter jet flight, which is more than most. So I do tell people that I am, in fact, a fighter pilot, because what kind of am?
It's amazing how fast those things go. Like I said, that's why I ended up being a nuclear missile officer, not a pilot. You know, so. But,
no big deal. Just the nukes.
No problem. But thanks for letting us be part of this.
Absolutely.
As I know, between the Sergeant Major and Sergeant Gaten and all our soldiers, and especially our infantry folks, like, you're part of the family. And I joke around. I see you more than I see some of my soldiers.
Yeah,
so,
it's true. We see each other all the time.
You've been just fantastic to us for everything. And I know these guys got some great stories.
Absolutely.
We
couldn't have been happier to have you overseas with us, and for a second trip, no less.
Yeah.
you know.
I don't blend in Kabul, Sergeant Major.
No, I did hear that. Yeah. You may want to put this over your head, yeah. I think, were the words that were.
Yeah, I think they were.
I recall that.
And I remember you and I sat down when we met in Kabul, and I was like, you know, if this Army thing doesn't work out for you, you've got great pipes. You could get into radio. And you were like, I think I'm going to stick with the Army. And I was like, well, I'm just saying that there's always a fallback plan. A
couple more years.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
We're going to start calling you the Golden Smog.
And Sergeant Gayton, who you were just talking about, he was one of the guys that helped me put the first trip together to go to Iraq. And that trip took over a year of work. And it was something we worked really, really closely with. And nobody thought, it's like when your little kid comes up to you and is like, I'm going to flap my arms really, really hard and I'm going to fly. And you're like, I don't want to tell you no. I would rather tell you okay, so that you just get really tired and go to sleep trying to fly. And that's what everybody kind of told us, like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, you're going to go to Iraq. And we worked really hard. And none of that ever would have happened without you, Jamie. So thank you so much.
You know, it was your dedication and, you know, the tribute to the soldiers. Every soldier that was over there was so appreciative that you came over and saw them. They've come back and told stories over and over again. You know, there goes the purple hair woman throughout a camp. You know, it's insane. But they can't appreciate enough of what you've done for them in the past and everything you do for us now. So I was honored to be a part of that.
Oh, thank you.
You were still in the infantry?
I just come out of the infantry and was working in recruiting. Roger.
So, and it's, like I said, you've got the Order of St. Maurice.
I do.
I saw you at the Blue Cord Ball.
You did.
So, you're pretty much infantry.
I'm as infantry as a purple-haired female civilian radio DJ can be.
We got to start. We'll start an annual purple hair ball.
Now you're talking. There you go. We could proclaim that today. It's my day.
You can do whatever you want.
That's right.
Gave you permission. Yeah.
That's right.
We'll just lessen the requirements on some of the haircuts for a little while prior to it. We'll go from there.
Can I play a song? Will you guys hang out with me for a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Can we do something real quick first?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on behalf, you know, we have something here that the Adjutant General and
Major
would like to present to you.
So, Kerry, this is a print of the first muster. So, as you know, since 1636, the National Guard has been around. And through executive order signed by President Obama, Salem, Massachusetts is the birthplace of the National Guard throughout the United States. So in 1636, December 13th, the Guard was founded. And the following April of 1637 was the first muster. So we've got that history. And then we roll into the shot heard around the world. Patriots Day just happened the other day. And as you know, our nation, the birth of our nation was once again, it was militia men and women actually coming to answer the call and put this nation on its great path to become the beacon of hope and freedom that it is for the world. So this is one of our National Guard heritage prints. It's Stand Your Ground. It's the shot heard around the world against the British. And it says, Mistress Carey, thank you for your overwhelming dedication and support to the soldiers, airmen, and families of the Massachusetts National Guard, 17 April 2018. So we want to give you that. And I also want to make sure I give you one of my Adjutant General coins. And you know the rules on this. So,
I know the rules. Yeah. I know the rules.
So if we happen to be in an establishment that serves alcoholic beverages or adult beverages, I owe you one if you give me that coin. Oh.
Thank you so much.
Right, thanks,
I am
Carrie.
Honored. Thank you, guys.
I know Sergeant Major's got something he wants to give you,
Roger,
too.
Uh-oh. So with that said, and not to be one up, I'm going to present you with my coin as well.
Oh, thank you. Oh. You guys are the best.
Yeah, well, once again, thanks for letting us be part of this, and we hope you get another 120 years out of this.
120 years?
You never know, you know?
All right, I'm going to play this song for you guys, and we'll be back on my 20th anniversary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.